and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am not these bubblegum dudes you're talking to.
Pedro Fernandez.
He will be mine in round nine, and if he makes me sore, I'll cut it to four.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide on WBC TV. Often imitated but never duplicated. Get this. I think we've been on now 1,934 weeks. Get that. 1,934 weeks. That's how many weeks I've been on the radio. That's a long, long time, isn't it? Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Who am I? I am your modest host, your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion. I won some boxing awards, basically for my writing, so I know a little bit about the sport. But guess what? I've always found out, especially after a big fight night last night with Shakur Stevenson looking as good as he did. I mean, he lived up to all the hype and more. But after that fight, maybe you've got a different perspective on things. Let me know. Here is the toll-free listening line. I open it up once at the top of each hour. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. That number, 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, 415-275-1613. Well, it was a masterful showing last night. I mean, Jamal Herring, he's no bum. I'm talking about, of course, the former Marine, the ex-WBO 130-pound champion last night was shut out. Did he win a minute? Yeah, he won a minute, but he didn't win much more than a minute last night. There were a couple of times where maybe he won a minute and had Shakur going backwards. But outside of that, it was all about double S. Shakur Stevenson looking like wow, maybe a phenom. Oh, speaking of phenoms, how about this guy, Xander Zayas? We'll talk about that in depth after the break. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 35, make that 36. No, 37-plus years now, knocking out all bums. You started to let your hair go, spend big bucks to top your wardrobe, but somehow you know there's much more to the trip. What is hip? Tell me, if you think you know. What is hip? If you're really hip, the past and the years will show you in a hip trip. Those are the horns of the mighty Tower of Power. Check them out. They're rocking and rolling. TowerOfPower.com. That is the website, of course. Emilio Castillo, the band leader, the confident lad that he is. Got it going on, man. They've got some new drops. Cuddy says they're not albums anymore. They're not CDs. They're called drops. When I grew up, they were records. Then they were albums. Then they were LPs. Then they were CDs. No, then there were cassette tapes and there were CDs. And now I don't even know how you guys get your radio and your music. It's all electronic downloads. Bottom line is, that's what's happening. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Will I touch on MMA? I will a little bit later in the show. Of course, the UFC rocking and rolling are trying to in Las Vegas, Nevada with basically a bunch of no-names. Anyway, Shakur Stevenson, not a no-name. 2016 Olympic silver medalist, okay? Considered one of the brighter prospects in the world of boxing. Of course, that last fight where he sort of sucked a little bit and, you know, I mean, he didn't look too good. He was clutching and holding and basically throwing 1-2s. But last night, it wasn't a 1-2 type of night. He was throwing punches in bunches. I mean, he was throwing punches up top and then coming back with a shot to the body to finish things off. I mean, he was just... Shakur Stevenson last night showed that he belongs in the upper echelon of boxing right now. I mean, he's that good. I kid you not. He's that good. Was he able to absorb a big shot from Jamal Waring? Not really. Waring's not that big of a punch or anything like that, okay? So he's not that, he's not a guy that's going to come out and drill you, okay? But Waring had one shot last night, and that was to come out and be aggressive, and he wasn't. I still don't understand why these guys want to do this. They come out and try to outbox the master boxer. Doesn't make sense. Robert Guerrero tried to do it with Floyd Mayweather. He didn't try to do that with anybody else. I mean, he went out there and he tried to fight. When you try to outbox a guy that's superior to you, it's like stupidity. It's like, what is it? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and failing? Okay? And that's what guys seem to do with these superior boxers. I mean, Marvin Hagler and Ray Leonard. I mean, Marvin didn't need to be boxing Ray Leonard, but I wanted to show him a better boxer. So he boxed and boxed and boxed and ended up losing a close 12-round decision back in 1987. May he rest in peace. Talk about the marvelous one. And speaking of the marvelous, How insecure can you be to have your name changed officially on your birth certificate from Marvin the Marvelous? I don't know. Think about that. Anyway, may he rest in peace. But Shakur Stevenson last night, masterful. Of course, a converted right-hander. What do I mean by that is he writes with his right hand. His right hand is a strong hand, but yet he leads with his right hand. Most southpaws, left-handers lead with their right hand and follow with the left cross. But he's got an educated boxing style. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he was thrown from both sides last night and thrown with authority. I lacked his dedication and his drive. The last time he said that, you know, he'll bring it up in the interview a little bit later, that Tim Bradley sort of spurned him a little bit, sort of agitated him, got him motivated to come out and do such a spectacular performance last night. But at the end of the night, Jamal Waring, not a bum, but he's just not in this guy's league.
Shakur Stevenson just had a breakout performance. Shakur, we had asked you before, was Jamal Herring the man to bring out the best in you? Did he?
Most definitely. I feel like Jamal Herring is a great fighter. He's tough. He's real tough. He got great boxing skill. He got great power. I was just a better man tonight.
What was said after the fight? Because there was a lot said before, and I know that it's gamesmanship, and I know that there's no friends, but what was said after the fight?
I mean, it was no friends because we were fighting. But now that we're not fighting, I love Jamal Herring. He's my friend. I don't got no problem with Jamal. Hey, to his wife, I'm sorry. I don't want no trouble with you. She's tough.
Yeah, she doesn't mess around, but neither did you tonight. What was it about your performance that made you happiest?
I want to thank Tim Bradley. Tim Bradley was criticizing me, calling me boring. So I wanted a fun fight. I wanted to perform, show my skill, show my boxing skill, my defense, my power. I showed everything tonight.
You did. What was most impressive is you were standing in front of Jamal Herring, and much like you have been able to do throughout your career, you were unhittable for parts of the fight. When did you know you had this fight won?
Around like the fifth round, I had landed everything. I was winning clearly. And then he started trying to come on. And when he started trying to come on, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a break and then step it back up later.
Jamal, his left eye started to swell early, but then that cut happened. What did you think when you saw that blood streaming from his face?
I smelled blood. I saw he was bleeding. I'm like, okay, I got to attack the cut. So every punch I was looking for, I was trying to touch the cut, just to make the doctor stop it.
The first title you ever won was a vacant belt. This one you had to take from another fighter. How did that feel?
It felt amazing. I want to be a superstar in the sport. I'm here to last. I take my craft very serious. I'm disciplined. I did a strong camp. I want to thank my team, Coach Wally Moses, Jack, Dirt, Kay. I had a strong team. They got me prepared for this, and we was in the gym grinding.
Everyone talks about...
I love my family and friends, too. I appreciate y'all.
Everyone talks about the young princes, kings, whatever you want to call them, at 135, who don't step into the ring against one another. But here at 130, there's champions who want to fight. Who do you want to fight?
I mean, there's only one fight left at the end of the day. It's the biggest fight in the division. Oscar can't keep ducking. It's time for him to fight. It's me versus Oscar Valdez. There's nothing else to look forward to. The 130-pound division, we need to unify. Let's get it.
That's exactly what boxing needs. Shakur, one last message to your fans who came out in force here in Atlanta.
I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. Oh, yeah, shout out to Jay Prince, Antonio Leonard, Andre Ward, Josh Dubin, everybody. I appreciate everybody that helped me out.
He mentioned Jay Prince there, of course, the CEO of Rap-A-Lot Records. Remember him? Not really. He came into the boxing business about 15 or 20 years ago. He was a notoriously a bad guy, like a tough guy, like a thug type of guy. But I always found him to be like the ultimate as far as professionals and a businessman was concerned. Maybe that's why I was afraid of him. I just was. I mean, you know, there were certain guys you'd want to cross, and I think that he was one of the guys that you were smart not to cross in the world of boxing. Now, straight up last night, of course, there were some good fights, of course, or good names, per se. Nico Ali Walsh is a grandson of Muhammad Ali. Now, you know, I'm not trying to say the apple fell close to the tree here. Maybe it didn't even fall anywhere near the tree because the guy doesn't look like he can fight all that much. But he's only had two professional fights. And last night he was eating right hands early on in the first round, and had James Wesley have been a little bit more than what he was as far as in punching power was concerned, talk about the kid that came in with just one professional fight, things might have been a little bit different. Okay, I mean, Andre Ward and those guys are like, you know, questioning his ability to win last night, let alone win in the future. So he straightened himself out, ended up landing a great shot, ending the fight. Mr. Wesley went down, I think, in the fourth round. At the end of the night, Nico Ali Walsh, okay, is now 2-0, and he's got two stops, and you got to give him a little credit. I mean, he had class afterwards, no doubt about it, but the guy that really stole the show, and I mentioned this before, his name is Xander, oh, God, Zayas. I mean, he is just a monster. I can't say no more. I've never seen a fighter this young with this kind of ability. I mean, he's got Roberto Duran like hands inside and Ray Leonard hands like inside. I mean, he's just like the best thing I've ever seen in a long, long, long time. I mean, he throws punches when you're supposed to throw them. It's just like, I couldn't find any flaws in him. I was looking and looking and looking and looking and looking because I had heard so much, you know, about this guy. He's only 19 years old, and Bob Arum signed this Puerto Rican kid from the land of Boricua. He signed him at the age of like 16, the youngest prospect he ever signed in his life. But Bob knows his stuff. Master Bob knows his stuff, okay? Of course, you can criticize him all you want. He's 87 years old. He's still rocking and rolling, promoting big shows. And, of course, he's got Oscar Valdez, and he's got Shakur Stevenson. So it looks like that fight will happen, I believe, in the near future. But anyway, bottom line is Zayas. Holy cow. I mean, the ups, the downs. When I say ups and downs, I mean the fact that he was able to punch, it changed levels. The way I've never seen a fighter change levels like that in just 10 fights. And Dan Carpencia, a tough guy, no doubt about that. He came in, but it was like fistic abuse. I mean, the guy wasn't in the fight. The guy didn't win 10 seconds of the fight. That's, you know, when you're just like getting your ass whipped from the start and then they stop it. His father stopped the fight. Thank you. It was, you know, that was good to see. That was good to see because his father was going to send him out. If his father sent him out one more round, he was going to get laid out. Okay. No sense in your guy getting laid out. He's beaten already. If a guy's beaten already, time to stop the fight. The fight is no longer competitive. Of course, Carpencia's father stopped the fight. I said this was so cool. Props to him. Of course, some of those ringside doctors, some of those referees, some of these other corner men should take a note from that young man last night. He performed admirably when his son, you know, his son's life was on the line there. And he didn't call it too soon. He didn't call it too late. That was a perfect call on the role of a father. Because sometimes, you know, the father, because he's got this emotional involvement with the fighter, you know, he's father and son, that he can't get the perfect median. It's either like he lets the fight go too long or he stops the fight too soon. He just can't be objective about it because that's his kid. You know what I'm saying? And of course, I've seen fathers kill their kids. Rico Velasquez Sr., I mean, before Rico died, 1 minute before Rico was, 1.5 minutes before Rico died, before he went out, his father said to him, this was like in 1989 in San Jose, California, and I knew he was going to die. I was screaming at the referee, stop the fight, stop the fight, stop the fight. I told the referee, stop this fight. Hank Alesper was a referee from Sacramento, California. I said, stop the, I ran up to the ring. Jack Fisk says, you can't do that. I said, Jack, you don't know boxing. So I ran up to the ring. I said, Hank, stop the fight, stop the fight. I said, you're gonna kill him. He's gonna die. Blah 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 blah. The referee told me, go sit back down, son. Let me do my job. 40 seconds later, Rico Velasquez was dead. But I remember what his father was telling him in the corner. And then when the referee wouldn't stop the fight, I ran over to his corner. And I went to his father, stop the fight, stop the fight. And his father looks at his kid and says, show me some balls. Yeah, he showed him some balls. He was dead 45 seconds later. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA, often imitated, but as you can see, never duplicated. More Ring Talk after the break.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times next to me.
Ain't nothing I can say, nothing I can do.
My buddy, my good friend, Leonard Williams, born Leonard Williams, Lenny Williams, of course, platinum recording artist, back with the Tower of Power. That was a few days back, but the bottom line is he's rocking and rolling. Check him out, LennyWilliams.com. Now, we'll go through some more boxing results. Of course, last night, unbeaten U.S. Olympian, one of the Isley brothers. I kid you not. Not one of the singing Isley brothers. Anyway, Troy the Transformer Isley, now 3-0, 2 KOs, scored a first-round knockout over a guy by the name of Nikolai Navarro. 2-2 now, 2 KOs. I guess he can punch a little bit in the middleweight bout. Time was 2:48 of round number one. And Evander Holyfield's son. Remember him? Remember Evander Holyfield? Of course, Evander Holyfield was the guy that got licked like a stamp, the guy that should have been arrested for impersonating Evander Holyfield, the guy that besmirched the sport of boxing and besmirched his own legacy, that made him set, that looked so bad to get lit up like Vitor Belfort. Listen, to get destroyed by Vitor Belfort. If you can imagine Vitor Belfort and you watched him destroy Evander Holyfield, could you imagine what he would have done to Oscar De La Hoya or Oscar De La Fishnets? Come on, man. If Oscar showed up in his best drag, you know, like the Victoria's Secret's bra and that kind of good stuff, it wouldn't be enough to keep the other guy from kicking his ass. It just wouldn't. I'm telling you, Vitor Belfort would have licked him like a stamp. But, of course, Oscar got COVID. Then he went to the hospital. And he's the only COVID guy that I've ever seen in the history of COVID now that's shooting videos. You know, doing videos in the hospital. Listen, oh, you know, no. You're supposed to be dying. Everybody I talked to had COVID on the phone. Like, oh, my God. Right? Not Oscar De La Hoya. He's in the party. He's in the hospital, like, partying, having a good time. Well, bottom line is, the reason why I believe he went into the hospital was to get out of that fight with Vitor Belfort, because he knew he was about to get destroyed. And of course, Vitor Belfort, a former MMA fighter, a guy that knows how to get leverage on his hands, he just does. I mean, he didn't have to hit Evander Holyfield all that much. I mean, Evander didn't look like Evander Holyfield. Like Hector and I were looking at this with the same perspective. I mean, there was no boxing ability there. I mean, he didn't know how to throw a jab. He threw a jab and it came back like that. What I mean is, you throw a jab and it's supposed to come back straight to your chin like that. But his jab came back like that. And, you know, that opened him up to the right-hand counter. And you don't have to be Muhammad Ali with a right-hand crowner to see that opening. I mean, Vitor Belfort saw that opening. Evander Holyfield was toast. So for those of you complaining, I heard some people complaining that they stopped it too soon, that he was a legend. Yes, he was a legend. Keyword there was. That was like years ago. Listen, me and the guy were in the same Olympic training camp. Me and Evander Holyfield back in 1984. What does that say? He shouldn't be boxing. You know, he just shouldn't. I mean, he's 58 years old, 59 years old. Evander, you know, he got embarrassed. Did he make a few bucks? I understand he made $550,000 for that. I don't think that was worth it. I really don't. I think he could have done something with Mike Tyson. Had he been smart, he would have done something just with Mike Tyson. They would have made millions together. Because nobody knew that Mike Tyson was going to go out there and destroy Evander Holyfield. Because if they fought that third time, and even in an exhibition, Mike Tyson would be arrested for domestic violence afterwards. I mean, that would just be a one-sided route. There's just no doubt about it. I mean, as far as ability is concerned, Mike's got a little ability left. He can still, you know, move around. This Evander can't even move around. He stood there like a pole. He looked there like a pole. I mean, bum. He looked like a bum. He looked like a guy that never boxed before in his entire life. Not in 1984 Olympic bronze medalist who was disqualified and should have probably won the gold. Okay, not a guy that won the cruiserweight championship and then, of course, ended up coming on and winning the world heavyweight championship. No. That's not the way you should have went out. But then again, all boxers go out that way. Think about it. Ali went out. I mean, Larry Holmes kicked his ass, and a year later he said, well, I'll take on Trevor Burbick, and Burbick beat him. Of course, that was in Jamaica, and that ended Muhammad Ali's career. But, you know, nobody can – Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, I can go back talk about his comeback against Terry Norris and Hector Camacho, the Camacho fight they televised. Of course, he went into the fight with a hurt leg, I think a bruised Achilles or something like that, but Ray couldn't put much weight on his right foot. But then again, the show had to go on, and Ray knew it had to go on, okay? So Ray went out there, and Hector Camacho had a wonderful night as far as the Harlem Heckler was concerned. Hector Camacho, may he rest in peace, man. You know, he had some issues, but anytime I was around him, he was so entertaining and so enlightening. I mean, he would lighten up a room. He'd walk into a room and there'd be nothing happening. Excuse me. And then, like, it's macho time. And you sort of went along with it. It wasn't a gag. It wasn't a gimmick. It was him. It wasn't a gag or a gimmick. I'll never forget the time that we were at the Riviera Hotel. Was it the Riv? I think it was the Riv. Live River, or outdoors at the Las Vegas Hilton, one or the other. I think it might have been the Hilton pool. But we were told to go there by Don King Productions. We were told to meet. The media was going to meet Hector Camacho at the pool, side of the pool. You know, then we have a press conference outside near the pool, you know, instead of inside in the stuffy room in the sense. So we had it out by the pool. So I guess it was about 15 or 20 of us out there. AP was out there. I was with Flash and Boxing Updated Time and the SF Progress and KMBR. But, you know, the AP was there and the New York papers were there. I mean, all the hot shots outside of me, including me, were there. And Hector Camacho hadn't showed up yet. He was about 10 or 15 minutes late, man. I'm looking at my watch saying, I wear a watch. I was looking at my watch saying, you know, the Macho Man's late. The Harlem Heckler's not here. I mean, he's usually early to press things so he can like do his thing, okay? Be the Macho Man. But anyway, he's not showing up. So all of a sudden, I guess about 15, maybe 20 minutes after he's supposed to be there, I hear, it's Macho time! You know, and he comes walking up to the pool, and I don't notice it, but there's a little old lady sitting in a wheelchair right next to the swimming pool, right next, like about 2 feet away from the edge of the swimming pool, and she's like in like a, kind of like a little cover over in this, you know, she's hunched over in this, and it looks like looked like an old elderly lady in this wheelchair, okay? So I just happened to notice. I didn't take note of it or anything like that. So Hector's walking and he's screaming, hey, it's macho time. And, you know, he walks up and he's walking towards the lady, you know, where the wheelchair is at. And I'm still not thinking nothing of, right? Boom! He runs over the wheelchair and he pushes it in the swimming pool. Whoa! This lady in the wheelchair just sinked to the bottom. I said, holy spit! Not with a speed, not with a P. I couldn't believe it. So then this person is like hanging around at the bottom of the pool for a while because they were an accomplished diver from UNLV. In other words, he went the whole nine yards. He was an accomplished diver from the University of Las Vegas, Nevada at Las Vegas there, okay, UNLV. In other words, a guy knew how to hold his breath underwater, okay? So he went underwater, and he was underwater for like a minute. I'm freaking out, okay? This guy's not coming up the whole nine yards. And, you know, me being the ex-cop and this kind of stuff, I'm thinking about, do I need to jump in here and save this guy? What's going on? So finally, the dude comes up, and he like that, and says something, you know, and I'm looking down, I'm saying, thank God he's alive, this and that. And then I realized it was a joke. Hector Camacho played a joke on the entire world of the press world. I mean, we were just like blown away by it. The best gag I think has ever been pulled on me as far as a media member is concerned. I mean, that was just the best line. I mean, I was so concerned that this person was going to die because, I mean, you know, when you're underwater for a long time, I mean, you know, like a minute's a long time to be underwater. Think about it. Try to hold your breath for a minute. I don't think you can. You can't. I mean, you just can't. It takes a lot. Anyway, this guy was underwater for a minute. When he finally came up, I realized the gag was on this and that, but I would give it to Hector Camacho having the best gag of all time. And of course, there was one time where I was fighting with my ex-wife, Anyway, but I was fighting with her over talking to my daughter on the phone, and he said, let me call her. So he calls her. He gets her on the phone. He says, is this Mrs. Fernandez? Oh, God. And she goes, yeah. He goes, who's this? She goes, this is Hector. Hector who? Because she thought it was my best friend, Hector Martinez, okay? Because she was going to dog him out. He goes, this is Hector Camacho, the Macho Man. So she's like freaking out for a minute, like, because that's her favorite boxer. This, so I guess her mouth was, he was aghast just for a second anyway. And then she ended ragging on him. Oh, you know, I let him talk to the girl, to his daughter all he wants. I don't know what you're talking about. He goes, hey, I just watched him hang up the phone on you. You hung up the phone on him. You're not letting him talk to his daughter. Bottom line is, Hector Camacho cared more than just a boxer. He was a pretty guy, straight up. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Hour number two, I'm going to bring in an activist. No, not me. A female activist, Claire Burke. And, of course, Claire Burke is a spit disturber. A spit disturber with capital letters. And, of course, changed the P to an H. I kid you not. But we'll go with Claire Burke in hour number two. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. And WBC TV, of course, is coming to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. Watch a live stream as I speak. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You know the story. Often imitated, but never duplicated.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
If it's necessary, I'll go 12 rounds, and I did.
Did you go to school, so to speak, on what happened to Rosario when he knocked him down and then got knocked out himself?
Just got to get your head together.
You use so many big words, how was your tricker, man?
I'm not going to trick you. You know I'm not going to trick you, Mom. Wouldn't think of doing it.
You're being extremely truculent.
Whatever truculent means, if that's good, I'm there.
You are not
a stupid boy.
You want to take Ashes Clay when Howard Cosell and everybody is calling you Muhammad Ali? Now why you got to be the one of all people whose color to keep saying Cassius Clay? My name is Muhammad Ali, and you will announce it right there in the center of that ring after the fight if you don't do it now.
No, I will not go 10,000 miles from here to help murder and kill another poor people simply to continue the domination of white slave masters over the darker people of the earth.
Some mighty horns here, the Tower of Power, of course. Below us, all the city lights. I think, is that it? I don't know. Anyway, bottom line is that's Lenny Williams from the Back to Oakland album, man. Nothing better than that Back to Oakland album. Of course, some people thought the third Tower of Power album, the one that went platinum, was the best album. I thought that Lenny did the Urban Renewal album. The Back to Oakland albums were fantastic presentations, no doubt about that. You heard the clip there coming in there, Muhammad Ali talking about, why don't you call me by my name, Muhammad Ali, and not Cassius Clay. He was talking to Ernie Terrell. Ernie Terrell is out of Chicago, Illinois. He's about 6'5", accomplished professional boxer. At one point in time, the WBA title holder. He was a formidable foe. He just was, you know. And I met him, I guess, about 1992, 1993. And I said to him, what compelled you to, like, piss him off that fight? Because, you know, he beat your ass for, like, 15 rounds. He would have took it a little bit easier on you, I think. But, you know, you poured salt in the wound. And this. He said, I never thought in my mind, I'm 6'7", 6'6". He goes, I never thought in my mind that he could beat me. I never, ever entered. It was never even a remote possibility. Ernie Terrell never thought that Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay, whichever one you want to call him by, and of course he made the mistake of calling him Cassius Clay. So did Nate Collins, the late Nate Collins, the middleweight out of Oakland, California. I'll never forget when Nate did that, had to do an exhibition with Muhammad Ali, or was going to do an exhibition with Muhammad Ali. I think it was at Mare Island over there in Vallejo, California, and he called him Cassius Clay. Why do you want to call the guy Cassius Clay? I mean, that was a stupid move. And Nate told me it was a stupid move. He ended up getting slapped around for it. So Ali slapped him in sparring. But, you know, Ernie Terrell, I think they fought at the Houston Astrodome. It was a mega event. It just was. But he kept telling him, what's my name? What's my name? What's my name? Well, eventually, Ernie Terrell, I think, figured out what his name was. But he could not. He could never fathom. See, he was bigger than everybody else. He had never lost a fight, he told me. He said he lost some boxing matches, but he never lost a fight. That's sort of like the Deontay Wilder type of thing. That's what I tried to tell you about Deontay. I mean, 6'7"? Never fought anybody bigger than him. I mean, come on, man. Never. I mean, never. And then he had to fight a guy, and Tyson Fury was 6'10", close to 6'10", closer to 6'10" than he is 6'9". So he's like 3 inches bigger. So all of a sudden, you know, he's fighting a guy that's bigger than him. And this is a different world. I mean, size matters in two things. I've said this time and time again. Pornography and combat sports. And in combat sports, of course, size mattered a couple of weeks ago when Tyson Fury, of course, you have to give Deontay Wilder all the credit in the world, but he took Deontay Wilder's heart away from him. He just did. He took, slowly but surely, at the end, there was nothing left of Deontay Wilder. I mean, he couldn't have got up off that floor if he wanted to. When the referee stopped the fight, it was perfectly stopped. No doubt about that. Give the referee some props there. Okay, but it was stopped at the right time. And, you know, I mean, Deontay isn't screaming about that. He was just, you know, he wasn't the better guy that night. He was never the better guy when they fought. The first time, was a Staples Center. He got that 12-round decision, a draw. I mean, oh, man, that was pretty bad. And, you know, we're pretty lucky that the Irish Gypsies that night behaved themselves because they had been ripped off. They should have got the penthouse. Instead, they got the outhouse, okay? And they could have gotten nasty down there in L.A., and they didn't. Tyson Fury kept them in check, this and that. He was a gentleman about the whole thing, of course. And then he fought the second time, and then he lights Deontay Wilder up almost every round. I mean, did Deontay win any rounds? Did Deontay win any rounds outside of the rounds that he dropped Tyson Fury in the ninth and the 12th round of their first fight? Outside of those two rounds, did he win any rounds? Probably not. Probably not, okay? And then the third fight, he showed all the heart and all the desire to continue. He wanted to go out on his shield. Guess what, pal? You went out on your shield. You did. You got to go out. Your wish was accomplished. You got to go out on your shield, okay? As far as Tyson Fury being the best heavyweight in the world right now, what does that sort of say about the heavyweight division right now? I mean, I didn't think he was in that good a shape. I really didn't. I think he could have been a whole lot better prepared physically and or maybe mentally. The fact that he pulled that William Joppy type of move, and what I mean by a William Joppy type of move is William Joppy was a former world middleweight champion, and he and I were talking before he had signed to fight Felix Trinidad. We were at the press conference that he signed, one of the press conferences anyway. We're in Palm Springs, California, and he tells me he's going to walk Trinidad down. And I said to him, not a smart idea, man. He goes, what do you mean? I said, he can punch. He goes, Pedro, he's a welterweight. I'm a middleweight. I'm going to walk his ass down. I'm going to knock him out. Don't do that. You never, listen, you don't test power. There's no, I mean, you want to test a guy's power, test it with an arm shot, not with your chin, okay? But, you know, Tyson Fury, he walked right into one of Deontay Wilder's right hands, so I guess about the ninth round, and he's like, well, just bob, just can, oh, like hit him right in the center of his cranium. And of course, I think that was the punch that broke Deontay Wilder's right hand. But the fact that, he was able to wobble around like he was, and, you know, I mean, how can I put this? You didn't need to stand in front of the man to try to test his power. I thought there was like maybe a brave act, maybe a stupid act. Maybe, you know, you had to do it because you're the man that you are. I'm talking about the king of the gypsies, but that wasn't the boldest, the smartest move in the world to make, because had he knocked you down or out with that, you'd have been history and you were in control of that fight. So I thought the two times that Tyson Fury got in trouble, he sort of invited it. He allowed himself to get in trouble by not fighting a disciplined fight. Now, speaking of discipline, wow, we've talked about this time and time again. Size, how it matters in combat sports. Of course, you've got heavyweights like weighing 265 pounds, and then you've got heavyweights like Nikolai Volkov that weighed 300 pounds, but he couldn't lick a stamp. I could have beat that dude. Anyway, no, seriously. You've got heavyweights, say, like 265, 270, 277, and then you've got guys that are like 205, 210 pounds. How do they match up against guys that big? Well, you can't expect them to give up 50 pounds. So the genius that he is, Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of the World Boxing Council, came up with this bridgeweight series. And we had talked about this for years, he and I, okay, off and on. You know, we need a division like for junior heavyweights or something like that, bigger than the cruisers, because the cruiserweight goes to 200 pounds, and then, you know, bigger than the cruisers, but smaller than the heavyweight. So Mauricio came up with 224, I think, and a half pounds. If you weigh under 224 pounds, you can fight in this bridgeweight division. Anyway, the first bridgeweight division fight went down Friday night, WBC World Championship on the line, of course, in this 225-pound division. Oscar Kaboom Rivas out of Colombia, now 28-1, 19 KOs, lost one fight as a heavyweight to a 260-pound dude by the name of Dillian White. In other words, outsize. Size matters again in two things, pornography and combat sports. Anyway, Rivas scored a hard-fought 12-round decision over Ryan the Bruiser Rizaki. Rizaki came in at like 200 pounds, 203 pounds, had a hard time putting on weight. He's a cruiserweight, okay? But the bottom line is, it was a very entertaining slugfest. Rivas showed that he's got some abilities. Of course, losing that one fight on the decision in 12 rounds to Dillian White. Speaking of Dillian White, everybody's talking about Dillian White like he's like the next heavyweight sensation or something like that. How did this, is he paying off boxing writers? Are there any boxing writers around to be bribed anymore? I mean, in my day there were, okay? Are there any to be bribed around anymore? Because this guy trying to say that he's what he is, I just don't get it. But back to Rivas. Rivas scored a 12-round decision, 150-111 and 115-112 twice. So that's a pretty good score, no doubt about that. He was in command from the start. Of course, it was a low blow deducted from Rivas, I believe, in the 12th round, a point deducted for a low blow. But the bottom line is 115-111, 115-112, 115-112 is a dominant performance. So we've got the cruiser, the bridgeweight, the bridgeweight division is off and rolling, no doubt about this. We're hoping the bridgeweight division. I can't get this right. Bridgeweight. What are we going to call it? Bottom line is, we used to call the cruiserweight division. Now we just call it cruisers. Bottom line is, bridgeweight division, 225 pounds or less, or 224 and a half. Bottom line is, the king now is Oscar Kaboom Rivas, and we'll see what he has to do. Of course, that one fight that he lost, he went up against a guy that was like 35 or 40 pounds bigger than him. And again, you just can't beat size. But it was an entertaining fight, no doubt about that. A good weekend of boxing. I mean, we had that fight on Friday night, and that was like a slugfest. I mean, for 12 rounds, you got to say, man, I'm getting my money's worth, no doubt about that. I mean, if you're buying the ESPN app or however you happen to be watching the fight, you got your money's worth. And then Saturday night, Shakur Stevenson coming out and, you know, maybe, do, you know, for a boxing performance, it was Academy Award-like. It just was. I mean, it was stellar. It was sterling. It was a seminal moment in the young man's life. I mean, he shut me up. I mean, I had like a list of things. I was bitching about him, like not wanting to commit himself, not wanting to throw the third, fourth, and the fifth punch, that he was reluctant, he was a little bit scary, maybe his chin was bad, maybe he didn't want to chest his chin, maybe his intestinal fortitude wasn't there, maybe he was just a 2016 Olympian by chance, I mean, Olympic silver medalist by chance, because, you know, some guys get in the Olympics, I don't know how they got there. United States Olympians as well. I don't know how they got there. I mean, who did they beat to get there? The bottom line is this kid can fight, and we're looking for bigger and better things as far as the world of boxing, sir. Now, pound for pound, of course, we got the king going November the 6th. Mr. Canelo Alvarez taking on Caleb Plant. Caleb Plant has dug himself a big hole by talking all kinds of spit. You know, I say spit on this show, I usually mean spit with an H. And yeah, he did. And I think he's backed himself into a corner to the point where Canelo's looking to punish. And if Canelo's looking to punish, you know, he's sort of, as long as, listen, Canelo can do whatever he wants in the ring, okay? But when it comes to talking, he's got to watch the mouth thing, because he doesn't translate well to English. He doesn't realize, like, a mother ducker doesn't, when I call you a mother duck, it doesn't mean I'm calling you, I'm not saying that you ducked your mother. I mean, that's what, you know, plus mother ducker's got so many different, you know, I don't mean mother ducker, but it's got so many different, look at Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac does that on YouTube, and he talks about how mother ducker's got so many different meanings and terminologies to it, but check it out, mother ducker. Anyway, bottom line is, we're looking at Canelo Alvarez, of course, the pound-for-pound king, once beaten, lost that one fight to Floyd Mayweather back when he was greener than guacamole. Of course, he and Mayweather have sparred a bit as far as verbally is concerned about Mayweather coming out of retirement and fighting one more time. I don't ever want to see Floyd in a ring again. I mean, maybe if he's advising Gervonta Davis or something like that, maybe. But I really don't want to see Floyd anymore. I've had enough of Floyd. And you should have had enough of Floyd, because Floyd has taken a lot of your money deceptively. He has. I mean, he's promised you exciting fights. I'm going to kill this guy. I'm going to destroy this guy. I'm going to knock this guy out. This won't go three rounds. This won't do this, won't do that. Bottom line is, every time Floyd fought, when the bell rang, the excitement stopped. Right then and there. It was no excitement to it. I mean, come on, man. He had a couple, you know, the Jose Luis Castillo fight, the first fight, he thought maybe he lost this and that. Maybe he did, but he came back and he dominated Castillo in the rematch, okay? So there's really no doubt as to the guys that he beat. He beat all of them. And, of course, the people talked to me about the Diego Corrales fight. Of course, that was for the 130-pound title, I believe the IBF 130-pound championship. Diego is a good guy out of Sacramento, California. He has some, we'll hold on for a minute here. He has some drinking problems. And when I met him as an amateur, I said to myself, this kid's going to become world champion. So I followed him. I coveted him. I was a local reporter. I coveted this kid. I mean, I really want to watch him. I called him on the phone, you know, was supportive of him. You need this, you need it. Anything you need. His parents were like very, his parents, I think his mother's name was Olga, but his parents were very much into his career and they were very supportive in a sense. So I didn't have to go out and help him, but it was there for him if he needed it. Okay. So then, he gets into a beef with his wife, and he's drinking. And I used to see him, and I smell booze on him, man, and I hate smelling booze on fighters. I used to run with a guy in Cuba, a guy from Cuba, in Miami. We used to get these guys up to run in Miami. I guess it was like 1999, 2000, somewhere around there. We were working with some Cuban fighters in Miami, Florida. I used to get these guys up to run in the morning, and I smell booze on them. Not a good thing. This is not a good thing, no doubt about it. Because you know if they're drinking. How about what the guy told me? He goes, it's only one drink at bedtime. I said, man, I'm smelling this guy 6 hours later. You're full of spit. Bottom line is, we'll talk about alcohol and boxing after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
The way that you walk, the way that you talk, really knocks me out, girl. The clothes that you wear, the style of your hair, the way that you fare. Under all conditions, you're mine.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Ain't nothing stopping us now. I tried to tell those guys that 1934 weeks ago. I remember when I came on the radio in 1984, they said to me, what do you know about radio? What do you know about radio? Listen, and there have been all kinds of rivals come at me over the years. Remember when I was with KNBR, they had a couple of guys that called them a couple of smart guys. They tried to come after me and do a boxing show. Then there was a couple of chicks that came after me on the internet. Before you know it, everybody's trying to imitate me, but they couldn't. They just couldn't do it. Often imitated, but never duplicated. They imitated me maybe a little bit. Bottom line is, we're the original podcast, or having been here now since 1984. On the radio since 1984. I remember doing broadcasts from Potrero Police Station in Hunter's Point when I was with the SFPD. I would get on the phone and talk to Charles J. on the phone and ask, he goes, what are we going to talk to? What are we going to call this? What do you call it? I don't know. And he goes, let's call it Ring Talk. I said, okay, Ring Talk. So bottom line is that's how Ring Talk started. It was like a lark on the telephone back in 1984. And here we are, 37, make that 38 plus years now, knocking out all bums still. Straight up, hour number two forthcoming on the Sports Byline broadcast. And, of course, on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. We'll come to you live, of course, the video stream. Of course, you can also come check us out on iHeartRadio. Of course, iHeartRadio comes to you live and delayed. Of course, the iHeart archives are hot and happening. We got it going on 24/7 here as far as Ring Talk Live Worldwide is concerned. Of course, this is the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We've been here like Sports Byline has been here longer than you can imagine. I mean, I was looking at these studios we walked in today. In fact, this is the old KYA radio studios. In fact, those people that are born in the city by the bay of San Francisco remember KYA being in like the hottest station back in the 1960s and 50s. I mean, that's how old the studio is. I kid you not. So we have some radio history, no doubt about that. We'll talk about the December 11th card at the Madison Square Garden. Of course, we'll talk about the upcoming star, Xander Zayas. We'll talk about him and more. Hour number two, of course. Maybe we'll have Claire Burke in. Claire Burke said she's stuck at an airport somewhere. She's supposed to be coming by on the show. We'll see what's happening with that. But hour number two is forthcoming on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. My name is Pedro Fernandez. We're rocking and rolling, of course. Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Hour number two, WBC TV, forthcoming after the news. Don't listen to the news. They're often, the news on our network is very confusing, very misleading, and it's often just stone cold disinformation and propaganda. So outside of that, stay tuned. After news, Ring Talk Live Worldwide comes back for hour number two, live here on Sports Byline.